we could be married. Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show with Dad's Point of View. I wonder if you know what movie that Beach Boys song was featured in. You could tweet me the answer at Bruce Allen, or just email me if you know, bruce@bruceallen.com. Now, no looking on Google. That's cheating. It is time for Teen Rap with Pastor Drew Sands. But before that, I want to say hello to Richard Siegelman, who is a local listener in Santa Barbara, who pointed out that the secret word of facetious may not be the only word that has the vowels in alphabetical order. He gave me a couple other examples, but they were pretty darn obscure, Richard. So I'm not so sure facetious doesn't really stand out as the only word that has the vowels in alphabetical order. It is time for Teen Rap with Pastor Drew Sams. Pastor Drew Sams has been the high school pastor at Calvary Community Church in Westlake Village, California for the last six, almost 7 years. And he's finishing up doctoral work through George Fox Seminary in Portland, Oregon. Pastor Drew and his wife, Erica, are expecting a baby in April. They live in Westlake Village, California. Welcome, Pastor Drew.
Hey, great to be back. Yeah, here we are in the third trimester. That flew by so quick.
Well, as always, let's open up your segment with a update on baby Drew.
Well, I think it was two weeks ago I told you I was going in for the first 3D
ultrasound. Yes, and I forgot to ask you about it.
Well, it was actually pretty uneventful, because the baby was so curled up that we couldn't really get any shots. So friendly, this
curled up because the baby's so comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. My wife says that he's taken after her because she's pretty shy. They were great, though, at the doctor's office. They said, you know what? We want you to come back. We'll do a complimentary session. You can come back whenever you want. So we're actually going back again this weekend. So hopefully next week I'll have some details. I'll let you know who's nose our son has and all that stuff. So
it's kind of you know, I haven't met your wife yet. It's like hard for me to believe I haven't met your wife yet, but it's the first I've heard of her being sort of shy or bashful. And it's very common, of course, with somebody as public and outgoing as you, that they may be with someone who in many ways is the opposite. So I find that kind of amusing to hear.
Yeah,
that.
She laughs all the time. We're so opposite.
Yeah, but that's
it works great.
Yeah,
it works great.
So, today's topic, what will I leave my boys? And as you know, of course, and for our listeners, I'm not talking about material things or money, but what you might leave them in the form of a legacy. And there's many different things I wrote and I've spoke about already. But I'd like your thoughts on the concept, and if there's anything biblical you'd like to share about that idea of leaving behind what I'm calling a moral legacy or a moral will.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to first begin by just saying I so appreciate that you're even asking yourself a question. I think so often we just get so busy in life that we don't slow down enough to ask, what am I going to leave my children? So starting there, I think whoever takes the time to ask those questions really has taken a huge leap towards really leaving a legacy. But I love some of these. That first phrase, how do you pronounce? I want to make sure I pronounce this right. Is it tikkun olam?
Tikkun olam.
Tikkun olam, which means repair the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that. This idea that we want to leave the world better off than when we first had it.
That's why it was number one on my list.
Yeah.
It's a commandment of sorts, or a mitzvah, which is a deed you're supposed to do in Judaism to repair the world. And it's also why I ask on Faith Sunday, which is on my Facebook page every Sunday, I ask, what are you doing to repair the world? And I try to give examples of things I do or suggestions to my Facebook friends on the Dad's Point of View Facebook page.
Yeah, that's so true. I often tell people that every time we even interact with somebody else, I often leave having spent time with them either feeling built up, encouraged, or torn down and discouraged. And I think that not only can we repair the world, but the people in it as well.
Well, that's what the phrase really means. And in Judaism, the concept is just to do it one person at a time. If you look at repairing the world in a global sense, it's too big. And you can't take it on, and so you will get frustrated. But if you look at just helping out a friend in need, a sick friend that might need a meal, those are doable. And the more you do those, the more they become part of your life. And then you can start maybe taking on some of the bigger things once you've learned to take on the little things. But it's the little things that make the world a better place.
That's so true. You know, some of the little things, too, are just the stories, the experiences that we have as families. And I think being able to talk about that with your kids, you go on a vacation or or even just going out to a meal or coming out of a movie, having those conversations creates memories that last for so long. And this is actually connected to my doctoral work. I know I haven't really talked about this angle of it, but there's actually a theory out there called narrative identity theory. And it goes like this, that we understand who we are based upon the stories we tell about our life experiences. So if I was to ask you, Bruce, tell me about your life, you would tell me stories of adventure and of Hollywood and your family and skiing. And as I hear these stories, I get a sense of who you are, what your identity is.
And what immediately struck me about that is most of us tend to, I am a big storyteller, and I know that some of the stories that are decades old have been embellished over the years to the point where I'm not sure what's completely true and what isn't. So how much of that narrative identity is real? Is it sometimes a combination of fact and fiction, so to speak?
Well, in many ways, how we understand ourselves based upon this theory, narrative identity theory, we'll say that even as we embellish those stories, that actually is part of how we shape our own identity. So to give you an example, my grandfather, he passed away about 8 years ago. He told so many tall tales of his life growing up. And I remember as a kid, I'd always ask him, Grandpa, how did you learn how to do this? You were 10 years old, and you built a sailboat, and you sailed it down the Potomac River in Washington, D.C. And I'd always ask these questions, how did you learn how to do this? And he would always say, oh, I learned that in the Swiss Navy. And I thought, wow, I knew he was in World War II. I didn't know he fought for the Swiss. And so this is the complete truth. It wasn't until after he passed away. Here I am in college.
You even found out that there was, of course, no Swiss Navy.
After he passed away, I was like, wait a second, Switzerland.
Slightly landlocked country.
Yeah, they're landlocked. Wait a second. So I looked it up. There's no Swiss Navy.
Oh, that's so funny. And they of course, were neutral.
And they're neutral
the
whole time. So it was this two-decade-long running joke that he had with me. But even though that was all embellished, those are such rich memories for me because it reminds me of his playful character. And that really is a huge part of his identity. He wasn't doing it to be deceitful, but it was, you know, part of the fun that we had growing up. And
that's very interesting. Very interesting. Now, you told me in our time before we went on air that you actually have a biblical reference about this whole concept of leaving a moral legacy.
Yes, and it's actually the foundational scripture passage that I have for my entire dissertation that talks about the importance of telling the story of what God has done in our life. So this comes from a religious perspective. But in Joel, this is found in the Hebrew scriptures, or as Christians refer to it as the Old Testament. This is Joel chapter 1, verse 3, and it says, tell what God has done to your children, and let your children tell it to their children, and their children to the next generation. And you see this domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you talk about in your article, what kind of legacy am I going to leave behind? It doesn't just end with your kids. It could go on for multiple generations.
Well, in Judaism, that's why the whole story of Passover is where they repeat the story for generation after generation and generation to not forget that God saved us from Egypt. And that's the living example of a ceremony that is exactly what that biblical phrase refers to.
So I really think the Jewish people as a whole are some of the best storytellers in the world. I think it's really foundational to who you are, and I appreciate that so much, and we can learn so much from that.
Well, that's part of the fun of having you as my regular guest. We are out of time, Pastor Drew. Please tell our listeners where they can reach you.
Yes, I am blogging at wewillsinganewsong.com.
Okay, it was terrific to have you on air. And once again, when is Baby Drew due?
April 25th. It's coming.
Right after tax time. Okay, well, I'm so excited. You have no idea how excited and happy I am. And I understand you and your wife are going on one last getaway before you have a baby in the house.
Yeah, I knew that I wouldn't be allowed back on the program without following your advice and take her on a trip. So I appreciate that. And she appreciates it, too.
Good. My pleasure. I'll talk with you next week. Thank you so much. Don't forget, you owe me a dad chat date.
I do. We'll offline, we'll figure that out.
Okay. Thank you very much, Pastor Drew. It is time for another break. Stay tuned. We're going to have a special guest, hopefully, if she calls in, Lori Burns, next after these messages. Look at-